Hello there, everybody, and welcome to the Backboard Podcast. Now, today we are here for episode 66. I did remember it off by heart there, of course. Definitely didn't check my phone. And today we're going to be talking about something that is very relevant, I would say, at the moment, and something that maybe people are going to be a bit smug about if they do own this kind of car. We're going to be talking about EVs, electric vehicles. Now, I'd like to welcome my good friends and guests, Hannah.
Hi.
And David.
Hi.
So, welcome to you both to the Backboard Podcast today. I was just going to say, you know, just for the guests to kind of understand who our guests are, just if you could tell us a little bit about yourself. So Hannah, tell my guests a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name's Hannah. I live in Bramcote, and I work for the Queen's Medical Centre as an occupational therapist, but I'm also one of the local borough councillors in Broxton representing the Liberal Democrats.
And I understand that you own an EV as well.
Pardon?
I understand that you own an EV.
I do, yes. Yeah.
Awesome.
I own an EV, yeah.
Fantastic. David?
Yeah, I'm David. Also live in Bramcote, also one of the local councillors for the Liberal Democrats. I'm a solicitor by profession, and I also own an EV, in my case, a Kia e-Niro.
Fantastic. So two amazing cars. We've got the
E-Golf. Sorry, I didn't mention that.
No, the E-Golf. I remember when we were talking in the pre-chat, we were talking about the awesome cars that you guys have got. And now, although I'm not old enough to have an EV just yet, and as I said to you earlier, I ride a bike. So a bit of an advantage there, you know, runs off scotch eggs and all that. So well, first of all, what does it feel like to actually have an EV? Do you feel that you have like an advantage over the, you know, the typical kind of fuel car?
Shall I start? It's
yeah, you do first.
It's quite fun being at a junction against, you know, a beefy you know, car with a big loud exhaust or whatever some of the guys like to put on their cars, and you can just leave them for dust. So it's very different to driving a petrol or diesel vehicle, because you get instant torque. So as soon as you put your foot on the accelerator, it just goes, and it goes at pace if you put your foot down fast enough, which is quite amusing.
Yeah, definitely. They've got incredible acceleration, and they are very, very smooth to drive, because you're not having to go up through the gears. It's all on the one gear. So it is a very nice experience to drive an EV car. And there is an element, I think, of looking smugly on those who are having to queue at petrol stations and thinking, well, we don't need to do that anymore.
Yeah,
I was actually going to mention before Hannah mentioned it, acceleration, big part of what people are talking about in terms of supercars within the EV sector, particularly Tesla's new Tesla Roadster, as I think it does like 0-60 in 1.9 seconds.
Yeah,
and other estimates have said 1.3 seconds or 1.1 because it has a rocket booster on the back of it. Crazy, but amazing. The acceleration is incredible. So coming back to David's point there, actually, the fuel stations, it's been, I don't know whether it's such an issue now. I go past fuel stations every day and haven't actually seen that much panic now. And I think it's fair to say that panicking is kind of coming to an end. Obviously, there is still some parts of the UK where there is quite a lot of panic buying still. But, you know, fuel supplies are better. It's good people aren't panicking. But how do you feel about this whole situation?
Well, I think it's been far easier for us because we don't need petrol. I mean, we need to be moving to a state to protect the environment where electric cars are the norm. And I think we're reaching a tipping point now where they're starting to become much more mainstream. The infrastructure for us is there. It's in supermarkets, it's in car parks. So you can charge up when you're going out. And the range of cars, of electric cars, is far better than it used to be. So I think the first generation of Leafs had a range of about 90 miles. Well, even a Leaf now can do 2-3 times that. And the Niro can do the better part of 300 miles on a charge. So they've come on a long way. There'll still be improvements, I'm sure, over the next few years. But the days of us relying on fossil fuels to get us from A to B, I think, are coming to an end.
Mm. Yeah, I'd agree with that. We have an e-Golf, and the range isn't anywhere near as much as the e-Niro or the vehicles that are available on the market now. We get around 150 miles to a charge in the summer, and then probably near 100 miles to a charge in the winter. But that suited us perfectly in terms of the local journeys that we mostly do. It becomes more of a challenge when you're doing the long distances, because you have to plan to stop and charge your vehicle, and factors like how quickly you drive and what speed you go in, and the, how wet the conditions are, how much wind there is, will affect the range on the vehicle. And you will notice that much more driving an electric vehicle than you will in a petrol or diesel vehicle, although those factors still impact. It's much more plain to see is the range on your vehicles going down on what we call the gasometer, because which is the bit that tells you how many miles you've got left on your charge, and that will fluctuate.
So a slight disadvantage there in terms of weather.
Yeah, so if the weather is colder and wetter, then the battery's got to warm up, and then when the roads are wet, you've got the rolling resistance of the water adding to the resistance against the car, making it work harder. Mm. So you get less range on your battery per charge, which of course is going to be impacted more in the winter when it is colder and wetter.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, you certainly notice it.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
You notice the difference between the summer and the winter for how far you can get on a charge.
Mm. That's a really interesting point, actually, because obviously weather affects us every day. You know, it affects a lot of the things that we do, you know, and for it to affect driving is possibly one of the reasons people might not be so keen to choose an EV. But before I kind of talk a bit more about weather, I want to come back to David's point when he spoke about the green side of electric vehicles. Of course, there isn't any emissions when it is running. However, my science teacher once said to me, now he has a Ford Focus, maybe he's done it up. In fact, it's the same car that Tim has. Same car that Tim has, same colour as well, right? Craig, I love Tim's car.
That colour?
Well, no, it's the same colour and it's extremely fast, right? And he said to me, do you want me to tell you the reason I'll never buy an electric vehicle, even though I'm all for the idea of it? Because if the electricity to charge the vehicle is being produced by fossil fuels, then does it outweigh actually having a fossil fuel based car? Now, my view on that is a bit 50-50, but what do you guys think about that statement?
There was actually an article on that in the Financial Times yesterday. Looking at that in some detail, and their conclusions are, yes, it does, but it does change tremendously from country to country, depending on the sort of or how they produce their electricity. So countries such as China, that's still very much coal-based in production of electricity, it's a far more marginal improvement than somewhere like the UK, where we've moved away from that. And I charge mine up at home. I have a wind turbine on the house, and we buy 100% green electricity. So I know that what we're doing isn't adding to the carbon footprint at all. And so even when you add in the carbon footprint of producing the car, and it does seem to be accepted that that's higher for an electric vehicle than it is for an ICE car, an internal combustion engine car, you still have a very big saving over the lifetime of the car on the carbon footprint. Mm. Batteries are a huge part of the carbon footprint of the car, producing the battery. But most of the figures, and certainly those that have been critical of EV cars, assume that once the car is dead, the battery is just discarded. That is almost certainly not going to happen. The materials in there are too valuable and will be recycled if the battery itself isn't repurposed for something. So we're too early in the lifespan, I think, of electric cars to really know what those figures will be long term. But all the studies that have actually looked at things properly do say it's a much lower carbon footprint for an EV vehicle. And I think the United Nations said that to achieve net zero by 2050, we need to have at least 60% of vehicles being electric cars rather than ICE cars, and moving to that target as quickly as we can.
I'd just add to that, really, so that the initial outlay of carbon involvement to produce the vehicles would be high, obviously, with the battery technology and all the plastic and carbon fibre and whatever other materials are involved in the structure of the car, which would be similar to a combustion engine. But once that vehicle's on the road and running, it's no longer using carbon to manoeuvre it. So we can't necessarily control the source of the power generation that we're linking to. So David has a bit more control than I do, in that he's able to charge at home and has green energy tariff and some way of generating his own energy as well, the electricity supply. We're entirely reliant on the public infrastructure, and so that's down to what's being used nationally or locally to generate electricity. But nonetheless, the actual manoeuvring of the car, powering of the car to go along the road, we're not producing carbon dioxide or other noxious gases and pumping them into the atmosphere, whereas the combustion engine cars will continue to produce that carbon output way beyond the initial production of the car.
So would you agree that it's a larger initial carbon investment, if you like? It's a bit of an interesting way of putting it, but a larger investment of carbon to produce the car, but in the long term it actually adds up much lower than that of a fuel car.
I think it balances out much more, and that there is that, you can just you wouldn't sit in your garage with the door closed with your car engine switched on for a long period of time, whereas an electric vehicle, you just leave it on and it's not producing any kind of noxious emissions. So I think that says it all for me in terms of the arguments. And the what I was told when looking at electric vehicles was the batteries would probably outlive the mechanics of the vehicle. The batteries can then be repurposed for other sources. And whilst that technology is quite expensive at the moment and not quite there yet in terms of being done in the UK, the ability to do that is there. And I strongly believe that will come, because it will be forced to. And it's the older generations of electric vehicles where they're having to upgrade the batteries much sooner, perhaps, than the generations of vehicles that are now. So I don't anticipate having to upgrade the battery on our Golf for the time that we'll have it.
And I'm the same. The Kia comes with a 7-year warranty, although I don't anticipate having the car that long. I think the battery will still be going long after that. And the technology will improve. A lot of the carbon footprint is because the batteries use some fairly rare elements that are mined in some quite remote places. But the recycling of those and the reuse of those, and indeed the replacement of those as battery technology improves, will mean that initial carbon outlay will come down a lot as well. So in 20 years' time, I think that cars will be very, very green methods of transport. The biggest problem will probably be generation of microplastics from the tyres, which is a problem now for all cars, and another one that we need to solve. But battery technology is advancing hand over fist, and I don't think it'll be long before we've actually solved the problems that we've identified so far.
So I'm going to put something new to you there. So based on what you've told me, you know, technology is improving in the whole of the EV sector, I would say. I think because it's obviously not a new technology, because electric vehicles have been around for years, you know, milk vans, whatever. They've been around for years. However, in this kind of situation where it's becoming a daily commodity, where, you know, loads of people have now got them, what do you think about hydrogen-powered cars?
I don't think that we're likely to see hydrogen-powered cars anytime soon. I do think we're going to see hydrogen-powered buses, lorries, and I think that's where that technology seems to be focusing itself on. For your domestic user, ease of use is electric. You just plug it in, leave it 20 minutes, drive off. Obviously, hydrogen's a bit more complex than that, but the next generation of lorries will be hydrogen powered. Again, very, very low emissions, if not zero emissions, and I think we will see that coming for heavier vehicles.
Yeah, I'd agree with David. I think if you're going to look at domestic hydrogen vehicles, you might as well skip a step, because essentially what the hydrogen does is generate the power into electricity through a series of reactions. I'm quite looked into it, but skip a step, you might as well have the direct charge of the battery and just run on electricity. It would be much more efficient for the domestic market. But yeah, for your bigger vehicles that need a big, much larger range than what domestic users will need, then I think hydrogen will come for public transport and HGVs and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I was thinking about it as you were talking. I thought what would my next question be? And I thought hydrogen cars definitely, or hydrogen transport vehicles have to be mentioned, during this discussion. I think important. There's the idea of nuclear powered electrolysis, with the waste product being hydrogen, and I think it'd be a big investment. So I think, I don't think the government or many companies are currently at this point spending loads of money on nuclear power stations to do this, because it's not the I don't know about safest, because I think nuclear powered is definitely getting a lot safer. But I think it's the cost.
The processes, the nuclear processes, are different for the production of hydrogen compared to what we think of as a traditional nuclear power station. So it's the difference between nuclear fusion and nuclear fission. There was a very interesting article on it in National Geographic a few years ago now, talking about or envisaging a situation where we could each have our own neighbourhood nuclear power station, which to an extent worried me. Yeah. But they do say that nuclear fission is a far safer technology and is much more akin to your local substation on an estate, something like that. So that could be done.
Yeah.
Although the investment would, as you say, need to come in the technology. Now, you mentioned a moment ago that we've had electric vehicles for a long time. And the only reason that we're at this stage now and that we weren't at this stage 50 years ago was the investment wasn't put into it. Mm. And electric vehicles were pretty much killed off by the petrochemical industry. A lot of the time in actually buying the rights, buying the patents, and then just not developing them so that they could maintain their market and their very extensive profits. And so we could have been here in the 1950s easily, certainly in the 60s, and not having to wait until the 2020s to get there. But we're here now, and the direction of travel is only going to go one way.
It's interesting to note that the first weekend of the sort of the fuel crisis coming into play with all the panic buying in petrol stations, that online searches for EVs went up quite significantly. I seem to remember it was one of the stats coming out.
I'm all for EVs. I've said it throughout since starting this podcast. I've said it through years and years and years of dreaming. And if you follow me on Facebook, you'll definitely know that I love a Tesla. I really want one, I'm definitely, if I was complaining about the laptop upgrade I've had to have, I think I'm going to be complaining a little bit more with how much it's going to cost for a Tesla, which brings me to my next point, the cost of EVs. We have this big worry currently, not just in the UK, because also I think poverty in the UK is something. When you mention poverty and you mention the UK, some people go, what? How? We live in one of the richest countries in the world, right? But it's not just about the UK. It's about the entirety of the world. There's a lot of people in poverty around the world. Millions, if not billions, of people are in poverty. How can we move to an EV kind of dominated society when most people can't actually afford electric vehicles?
The cost will come down as the demand or as the market share increases. Simply the economics of supply and demand will make them cheaper. But there is an issue. They are more expensive to buy. What there isn't at the moment is a significant second-hand market in EVs, but that will develop over time. And the running costs are massively smaller than a traditional car. One of the figures that it talked about in the Financial Times article yesterday was that your average ICE engine, internal combustion engine, has 2,000 parts, and an EV engine has 20. Yeah, so there's far less to break, far less to have serviced. The actual per mile running cost, very, very significantly lower. So once we can get the cost of the cars down, the cost of actually operating them is a massive saving for people. But you're right, there is an awful lot of poverty. It is going to be a challenge to make them affordable for enough. Governments can assist in that by investing in the technology for them, investing in battery development, because that's a very large part of the cost of the car, and generally encouraging that sort of work.
The initial outlay can be very expensive to purchase a vehicle, but there are lots of good lease deals and higher purchase deals on the market coming through, and those prices are coming down, which may be one way that people can access them in a more affordable way. However, that still doesn't address those members of our community that are on the more severe end of the poverty line and won't be able to afford the vehicles. I was listening to some podcasts and watching some YouTube videos when we were looking at buying our vehicle. And in some respects, as a society, we may need to look at changing our whole ethos around car ownership. For much of the time, our cars just sit on our driveways or in car parks at our workplace or on the road, or not really moving, if you think about it. I think the growth of car sharing type schemes where you use the car in the time and place that you need to, and then somebody else will use it in between, maybe a way to encourage EV adoption as well. And certainly when you look at a lot of the higher vehicles now, as we were going past an Enterprise vehicle this afternoon, and that was a Nissan Leaf. I think the car hire companies and car sharing companies are moving to electric and hybrid vehicles because they're cheaper to run and cheaper to maintain.
Hmm.
I think to get to a level where people would be happy to not have their own vehicle, an awful lot of people want to have their own vehicle, we would need to have something like the bikes that they have in the city, or the scooters, where they are instantly available and you know there's going to be plenty around. Obviously the cost of that is significant to set up in the first place, but then again the savings are massive. If you're not actually paying for the vehicle, that's a huge chunk of money each month that you're no longer paying out.
So I think based off the conversation that we've had today, I would say that the idea and glimpse that me and my viewers are getting is that the initial fixed cost for the EV is a little bit higher, but altogether, you know, it's actually lower in the end. And it's the same with the carbon emissions.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I did the maths before I bought mine to work out if I could afford it. And the amount I'm saving compared to what I was paying for a diesel car, which I had before, just in running costs, is enough to pay my monthly lease payments for my car.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is incredible. That really is good. And in fact,
our first service was £75 all in, and that was to have the wheels changed as well. There was an extra bit. It would have been like a bit cheaper than that. We had the wheels swapped from front to back so we could make the tyres last a bit longer. And whereas our first service on our diesel, which incidentally was an eco diesel in theory, massaged by Volkswagen probably, but anyway, never mind. it was 2.5 times that for its first service, you know, with all the checks that they need to do, and you just don't have that level of maintenance on an electric vehicle. So it's often looking at your longer term costs, not necessarily if you've got the wherewithal to either finance it, some kind of finance deal, either lease or hire purchase or PCP, or in our case, we had the money to pay for the vehicle in full. We've saved a fortune in fuel costs.
And I think this is what it's all about. You know, we will have to make that investment, but over time you'll actually be saving much more money. So, well, I would hope that, you know, if you've been listening to the episode today, that you've taken something from this. Maybe you're looking at getting a new car. You know, maybe you're not going to buy an EV, but maybe consider it, because I think that the things that Hannah and David have told us about are extremely interesting. And of course, maybe you just want to wait a little bit longer until it's a little tiny bit more cheaper and the technology a little bit better. But there's plenty of great cars out there to buy. You know, it doesn't have to be a Tesla. That was just an example that I gave earlier. There is amazing electric vehicles out there. And obviously the Nissan Leaf that has been mentioned a few times is an incredible car. You see them everywhere now. So, my Zoom meeting has just told me that we haven't got too long to go until the meeting ends. So I'm going to call it an episode there. It's been absolutely fantastic to talk to you both.
Thank you.
You know, it's been absolutely brilliant. Hopefully one day I'll be able to come and do a little EV car meet, if you like. And hopefully I'll have an EV myself. That's the plan. But for now, it will be a bike with a little trailer on the back of it. So it'll do.
Yeah, gets you about. It's amazing. Yeah.
Well, that is absolutely
the greenest of the lot of us, quite frankly, being on your bike.
Well, or I can just use my feet if I really, really, really want to be that guy. But who can do that? Not me. So I'll stick to the tram. But no. So thank you all for tuning in today. I hope you really enjoyed this episode. Of course, you know, give it a share if you really do enjoy it. Tag me in your thoughts. give us a question. And I'm sure that you two, you know, may be interested in doing another episode at some point.
Absolutely.
And, maybe answering people's questions. So, you know, if you've got questions, send me in the questions and we will answer them on the next episode that we do as a group. So there you go. That was episode 66 there with Hannah and David. Pleasure to have you both here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.